You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
And Tracy, we are back after the Thanksgiving holiday here in the States. I know that you were cooking. I know I was cooking. I know a lot of other people were cooking. All the people who were cooking were probably very stupid and should have just ordered in.
I think it depends on so many factors. I have a weird relationship with turkey as something to cook and eat because on the one hand, I really enjoy it. But on the other hand, like the over-under odds on whether or not it's going to turn out great or if it's just going to be a total wash that's not worth the labor are not awesome. And so it's always something that when I'm done preparing it and we eat it, I sit back and I'm like, oh, that was nice. And then I look at that friggin' carcass sitting there that I have to finish like doing all the things
carving,
to like I'm in a Laura Ingalls Wilder book and I'm like, oh, I should have just gotten like a chunk of chicken.
So, right? Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. A friend of mine was texting and said, well, I guess there's nothing for me to do. I was going to make the mashed potatoes, but everybody else in the family is cooking and making things. And they told me not to do anything. And I said, lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
So damn lucky.
Yeah.
Go for it. We didn't talk about this. And I know we have a guest who's just waiting with bated breath to be introduced. But we didn't talk about this.
Yeah.
But I am curious. Do you brine your turkey?
No, because usually I buy it frozen and they tend to advise against brining frozen turkeys because they're usually already injected with sodium and crap.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, then in that case, let's get on to our guest this week. Our guest is Neil Litherland. And Neil, why don't you tell people who you are and what you do?
Hey there, everybody. For those who don't recognize my name at all, which I'm assuming is everyone here other than Tracy, I'm an author. I do a lot of stuff on the local con circuit. I write role-playing games, and now I get to be a shiny new guest on this particular podcast.
You have to expand on the local though, because they don't know where you're local to.
That is
we're national, baby.
That's very fair. That is very fair. I live in Northwest Indiana, so for me, local is sort of the Chicagoland Midwest area. If you see me beyond
and I will correct you. I will correct you, Tracy. We're international because we do have fans in Europe, Great Britain, and I believe in Australia.
Fantastic.
Yes. You've
really gone big time. I appreciate that correction. You know, you're part of Neil is part of that sort of cosmopolitan metropolis sometimes referred to as Greater Chicagoland, which I like to envision as this sort of like feudal demands of some sort where we've like claimed the better suburbs. And depending on who you ask, Greater Chicagoland either goes all the way to Peoria, at which point we go, no, and sort of be like, well, it's fine. You can keep that place. And all the way down to Decatur. Some people even get like really excited about their Greater Chicagoland and they start wanting to like claim half of Lake Michigan. And so I really think it kind of comes down to like, how strong is your imperial vibe, Chicago?
I think it gets to Gary, at which point, as someone who finished my education at the college in that particular town, it has that kind of Mordor vibe of it comes all the way up to it and then is like, no, we're not that confident. It's very small, and we probably could take it, but we're not willing to risk it.
One does not simply walk into Gary.
They do not. Oh. And you can tell people who do because we've been either attending a job or going to school long enough that we just don't care anymore. And the sheer ennui that surrounds us is almost like actual armor to the point that nothing that actually haunts the streets of Gary will bother us anymore. It only messes with outsiders. It's a very weird thing.
Fantastic. The sheer ennui is also a sort of powerful armor for what you do, because one of the things that made me excited to have Neil on the podcast, folks, is that he's one of the most multi-talented and sort of spread out everywhere writers that I happen to personally know, and really kind of self-made in every sense of the word. And I guess I'm thinking about that a lot because of the news that came down in the last few days of Penguin Random House being eaten by Simon and Schuster, or vice versa. No, it's Simon and Schuster being eaten by Penguin Random House, which I believe now means that it's Dragon Ball. Yeah, I think it's Dragon Ball Z name is now going to be Penguin Simon Random Schuster Power Mega Death Attack.
This comes on the heel of the whole controversy with Disney. Mm-hmm. You know, Disney not paying authors royalties because they said they don't have to. After buying like LucasArts and buying 20th Century Fox, novelizations of films and things that people have done under those labels, Disney's like, we don't have to pay for those. And everybody's outraged by that. And some people are saying, you know, is the same thing going to happen here? Mm-hmm. And then they're kind of like, well, no, it can't possibly, because this is publishing to publishing. You know, that doesn't really happen. And then I'm remembering, was it Nightshade?
Oh, Nightshade Press got eaten by Start, which, interestingly enough, Start ate Pyre, and Pyre publishes me. So there you go.
Nightshade got split into two. There was two arms. One was doing the print and one was doing the digital. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time, authors losing their deals and having to renegotiate everything.
Oof.
So, and a lot of them freaking out over it. Yeah. A good friend of the podcast at the time was just torn because the deal that was being offered was horrible compared to what had been in place at Nightshade. So
occasionally they do like, whoops, we left those contracts in the other moving box. They must not have gotten here yet. So let's just start over.
So this is going to be interesting. Yeah. This is going to be really interesting. And I know this is a tangent and not necessarily one that we were going to go down, but it should be interesting to see what happens. If this is going to be like the Disney thing where, you know, where Disney buys 20th Century Fox as an example and just guts it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we go from, you know, say 100 movies being released every year by the two studios down to 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, something like that. Is it the same thing going to happen with books and imprints? Like, are they going to go, we already have a science fiction imprint, so we don't need this part. We already have a YA imprint, so we don't need this part.
Yeah. No, it's one of the reasons why there's this weird serendipity to this being your date to be with us, Neil, because you are very famously given the moniker you've given yourself, owned by no man, so to speak, in the world of publishing. So talk to us about your stuff and how you have scrapped to make your ends meet.
Well, you opened the door, so I suppose I shall. For people who have never met me at a con or who are not familiar with my blog, the moniker that Tracy is referring to is, for many, many years, I have billed myself as the literary mercenary. And that is part of the reason I have such a wide and varied catalog as far as genre, topics, all of that goes, is there's a British horror author whose name I cannot remember off the top of my head. I would have written it down if I knew I was going to bring him up today. But he wrote one of the worst novels I've ever read, and he's a hugely prolific individual. And he and I have a very similar philosophical bent. I was watching an interview with him recently, and the host asked him the same question they always ask authors who they have on their show. And it's, you know, it's like, what do you need to get the inspiration to start your work? And he looked at them and he said, I need money. It's amazing. Someone cuts me a check and then the muse just descends upon me with great speed. And I'm like, this guy knows what's up. And so it was very similar of anytime I find a spot where it's, I have an inability to say no to open projects if someone is putting cash in my hand. Most recently, I've had RPG companies who email me being like, hey, are you familiar with this game? Not really. Why? Well, we want to pay you like $100 to do this thing. Yes, you got a copy of the book? I'll figure it out. Yes, yeah, we need a post-apocalyptic romance with a happy ending. Okay, what do I get for it? And then they give me a contract and I get it to them within a few weeks. Or, you know, there's most recently I had my first novel release with Ring of Fire, which I'm excited about. Eric Flint's Ring of Fire Press for its full title. Where my main character is a Maine Coon in New York City who just gets involved in shenanigans and mysteries where people do not matter. It's all about the street animals. And
it's totally a noir. I loved Marked Territory, which is the book that Neil is referring to here. And it's totally a noir 40s style gumshoe kind of experience, except like as done by the edgy aristocrats, I think is sort of a way of envisioning it.
There's a very good, speaking of brief aside, Tracy was one of the few people who actually heard the original short story where Leo sort of debuted when I read it in like a very small room at WindyCon for like four people. And it was like part of your reaction and everybody else's reaction was like, well, apparently nerds love cats. So we're just going to write about cats for a while and see how well that goes.
There's nothing worse than when you're at a convention and you're sitting around and you're talking to all your fantasy author friends and everybody's telling stories about their cats. Then someone mentions a goddamn dog.
Yep. Patrick, of course, is not being serious because one of his superpowers is that whatever human he's meeting, if they have a dog with them, the dog is now his best friend.
Well, yes.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that is a great blessing. And you would be beloved by the Irish, I believe, is the myth of it's the proverb of what is it? Do not trust
Cool
a man
Colin,
who is. Yes. It? There
yeah.
we go.
Yeah.
Never trust a man who is not beloved of dogs.
Yeah, just last night, Giles from Beyond the Trope podcast was texting me questions about their website and how to do some stuff. And I'm like, well, I haven't seen any puppy pics in weeks. So
so there's going to be some quid pro quo here.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I need some wagon tails, as it were. For web consultation, that is a fine going rate.
I thought so.
Yeah, it's totally
as long
fair.
As the internet exists, cute pictures of animals will always be viable currency.
So cute pictures of animals and like and cat gumshoes and things of that nature are things that obviously all of us can agree on. But I think some of the other stuff that you do, Neil, that is exciting and probably a lot of fun for our listeners to get into is the stuff you do where you're, through Vocal and through RPGNet, where you're just really good at sort of having a lightning rod idea and sticking it in the ground and going, well, guys, let's see how the world reacts to this. I'm thinking in particular of two kind of ongoing series you have, one being the character alignment series. The most recent installation was the Captain America one, wasn't it?
I figured after such a contentious election season, that would be a little breath of fresh air for people who wanted to argue about what kind of good someone is.
Right. And also a contentious background, how to build or how to make character, insert character name here in Pathfinder.
I do love my character conversion series, though I haven't added anything new to it in a while due to, I had to move the entire archive.
Yeah, that is quite an undertaking. So, okay, since I brought up the Captain America thing and you've brought it up as sort of like a mentally healing exercise, let's drop the TLDR real quick on the audience here. Your argument is that Captain America's true alignment is what?
It was chaotic good.
Okay. All right. So we gotta let's walk through the logic here. I will play devil's advocate for the sake of making the conversation move along.
I fully accept this.
Yes. So hang on a sec. If Captain Literal America like doesn't want people to swear around him and will stop in the middle of the battle to lecture them about their manners and things of that nature,
yes,
is chaotic good, how do we explain his adherence to all of these highly detailed and frequently outdated social mores?
I have to find words. I think a part of it is that it's not so much a code that he genuinely expects like the world to obey by. It's sort of this is the culture he's from, which I think is very different from. It's a thing I try to lay out for people. This is a big argument that comes with the series, and I know not everyone agrees with me, but I feel this sort of framework helps mitigate problematic aspects of gaming discussions of for a lawful alignment such as it is of it needs to have an actual code, you know, something that you can objectively hold at arm's length and say these are the things that we obey, these are the strictures we live our lives by. And it's more of an informal thing as far as like, you know, Steve's like old-fashioned nature. Which that sort of plays more into the man out of time who is unusual, as opposed to, say, like a Victorian gentleman who genuinely expects you to abide by these codes. And if you do not, there should be face slapping and duels at noon on the lawn.
All right. So,
you mentioned. How do I want to put it? So, Cap's from a certain time period.
Yes.
It was basically the gist of your what you're talking about there, and he's just used to things being a certain way. Mm-hmm. Did either of you watch the final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I did not, unfortunately. I was a very hard sell after season one, and then I just kind of fell out of it.
Either of you watched Peggy Carter?
I did watch Peggy Carter straight up until it got unjustly ended.
Aww. So her partner in that show, the guy with the limp,
yes,
is in the final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay.
And he's out of time.
Right.
And everybody is reacting to him the way the Avengers react to Cap. And it's hilarious.
Oh,
you know, because he's kind of like they travel. The whole premise of the season, I'm going to spoil it here, is time travel. There's lots of time travel happening.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, like they kind of sort of accidentally take him, but they don't accidentally take him with them. Mm-hmm. And they end up in the 70s, I want to say, and they all go to clothing stores to buy new clothes, and he comes out wearing the exact same suit that he wore going in. And it's because he's like, yeah, I'm not wearing this. What do adults wear in this time? Because I'm not wearing, like, what did you call bell-bottom jeans? Yeah, I'm not wearing those. You know, and it's just, and he just continues, like, he has the same hair, he has the same suit, everything is the same for him. And it reminds me of what you're talking about with Cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, that's where he's from, that's the way he's raised, that's what he knows. You know, he's going to open the door for Daisy whether she wants him to or not.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
We're talking charming vintage nuance rather than deeply held personal convictions.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. So obviously, since I brought it up, I found the Captain America is Chaotic Good piece to be the heartwarming thing that you wanted to offer us in the post-election universe. So thanks, Neil. But I feel like I want to sort of spin the dial in the other direction, because I know you've been doing this series for a while. And like I said, it can be a real lightning rod.
Just a bit.
What for you was the post where you were like, I don't think this one is going to cause a lot of blowback. And the next thing you know, the internet came for you.
I sort of knew it was going to be controversial, what with the all of the attention the character and his creator, one of his creators, had recently received when I put together the one for the Punisher, who has been as sort of a caveat, a Frank Castle was one of my first superheroes, which tells you my parents really should have been checking what I was reading as a child, because that was when Frank Miller was heading the series.
Oh God.
Yeah, I had a very odd childhood, but it's
I just had that conversation with my brother.
Oh dear.
Because I was rewatching old episodes of The Big Bang Theory, and I noticed that they have comic books in frames on their walls, and I thought, oh, that's a great idea. I should do that. So I ordered some frames, and then I sat down and said, oh my fuck, how am I going to pick which books go in? Like, I have thousands of comic books. How am I going to choose?
Mm-hmm.
But the point, and I was telling my brother that, and he was laughing, and I said, you know, Mom never looked at any of the comic books that I bought.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, why would she have to? And I said, well, as an example, there's a great run from Eclipse of DN Agents. And it's about a superhero team that are grown in a lab by a corporation, and they all work for the corporation.
Cool.
And I said, that book and Crossfire, the spinoff, I said, were full of nudity and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, if it makes you feel any better, Mom never looked at anything that I read either. And I went, oh, you read stuff?
Hey, you can read?
So anyway, sorry.
I'm just going to throw out there real quick before we get back to the Punisher, which is, this is going to be a very worthy discussion on the Punisher here, that my mom was the one who got me started on Wendy and Richard Pini's ElfQuest, which has literal 2-page spreads of naked elf orgies on it. And when she got me those books, she actually just turned to those pages and pointed them out to me. And she said, like, just, you know, this is coming up, honey, because she wanted to give me like a trigger warning or something. She was very advanced as a parent, I have to say. So Neil, by all means. Nice.
That is a thing. But it was because during quarantine, I've been paying attention to all sorts of things. And one of the charities that caught my eye was Skulls for Justice, which was sort of a A move by one of, I cannot remember his name because I'm on the spot and my brain is made of Swiss cheese. But it was one of the original creators of the character of the Punisher. And he was very displeased at how the iconic skull has been adopted by sort of, police forces, by those who are very hardline on the right wing edge of the political spectrum. And so this was him sort of coming out with the statement of, clearly you have never read my work because Frank would shoot you. This is the exact opposite of the thing that, you know, he stands for, if you can say he stands for anything. So it was sort of giving the opportunity for lots of up and coming artists to design their own version of the logo. They sold T-shirts and proceeds went to help benefit Black Lives Matter and various other organizations. This was back in the spring, I believe.
Yeah, I actually just Googled it. It's Jerry Conway.
Thank you. That was his name. And I would tell everyone to go check it out, but unfortunately it was a limited time thing and it is now no longer around. So maybe if we're lucky, they'll do it again because it was really cool. But it got me thinking about the character in sort of that very different light. Now, particularly with, it's one of the more recent comics where there's this whole scene of Frank gets accosted by two cops and they recognize him and they start fanboying. And you can just see the disgust on his face while he watches these two grown men just geek out about the horrible things that he does. And it just makes it very clear to them, it's like, this is your one-time warning. If I see you doing this ever again, I will kill you and everyone else who does this. There's a guy that you should be imitating. His name is Captain America. He will be glad to have you follow in his image. No one does what I do. And so it was that sort of like oddly self-reflective nature of, there's a part of him that knows what he's doing is wrong, but at the same time, he can't stop it. And that makes him very compelling as a character. And it was sort of the thing I wanted to do early on to get the Alignment series going was showing players that because a character is evil by the definitions of the game, that doesn't mean they're not interesting or that they're sort of this like cartoonish, like burn down the inn and eat babies sort of thing. Of you can be a character who by the rules is evil, but also be very nuanced and very compelling. And it was very interesting going back through all of that and just sort of having to remind people of like, this is really fun. It's a wild ride. None of this is legal. None of this is good. These are all objectively terrible things being done by a very broken man. But wow, is it fun to follow.
Now, to getting back to this is like the slow burn reveal here. Mm-hmm. Your ultimate verdict and the argument that you posted was that Punisher is lawful evil, correct?
I think I went neutral evil just because he doesn't, well, he's had so many
stages. This is where the literary mercenary part comes in. You're like, that was months ago, me.
It was many months ago. I think I've been trying to find at least one character for each one of the alignment blocks. And I had Judge Dredd for my lawful evil. So I think that Frank got moved to neutral evil specifically because he doesn't seem to have a central motivator he has a central motivator, but he doesn't have like a code that determines who does and who doesn't get it this time. And we've had so many different writers and just so much chaos into it. He has like a central through line, but not real any cohesive single thing that he follows other than that.
The systemic quality is absent.
Yes.
Yeah. Gotcha.
You know, this is a completely different tangent, but you mentioned some different superheroes. A little bit of trivia in my brain that I just happen to know, because you mentioned Judge Dredd and you know, Sylvester Stallone played him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Carl
Urban, yes.
Urban played him. And everybody likes Carl's take much, much better. Number one, because he never really takes his helmet off.
Yes.
Which is a big thing in the comic. Mm-hmm. Did you know, in order to be eligible for awards in Hollywood, if you wear a mask the entire time in the movie or the TV show, you are not eligible for awards.
Well, that explains why, like, my favorite slashers have never won anything.
Well, also, I mean, because there was some conflict going on in the world of the Mandalorian behind the scenes.
Mandalorian has broken that, yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Because there's the actor who has been portraying him, I guess, has been lobbying for that reason to be able to take off the mask, because he wants his work to be considered for award season. And there's a real conflict about the kind of ethos of the character vis-a-vis the mask. You know, given we already had the Disney conversation, but, you know, it's pretty clear that the mouse can find new people to put in its house, so to speak. So I think that there's a real question there. If he put his foot down and said, I'm not continuing to play this role unless you let me take off the masks so that I can be considered for awards eligibility, if they'll be like, that's cool, bye. You get another dude around your size to wear a mask.
Well, but here's the thing. The other thing that's come out is they found out he's not always the one in the suit.
Another complicating factor.
Yeah. However, he's learning this season about Mandalorians. So,
It's actually speaking of fun tangents, masks and Hollywood. It's reminded me of a thing I learned the other day. It's a little bit of trivia. There's nothing to do with anything, but apparently the entire category of psychological thriller was created specifically because the snooty folk who were judging awards in the late 80s, early 90s were absolutely just repulsed by the idea of giving a best picture to a horror film. And that's why Silence of the Lambs is considered a psychological thriller.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
I mean, it's part of the reason why the term speculative fiction became popular, too, as a sort of catch-all umbrella home for SFF and horror and other sorts of things. Like, speculative fiction is sort of the pinky-up way of saying, like, weird stuff that poses questions and messes with our assumptions. And because it sort of frames it in that intellectual context, people are like, oh, yes, this is not sci-fi. This is speculative fiction. This is about fantasy.
Well, and I think we've talked about it before. Like, I remember going into Barnes & Noble and not being able to find a horror section anywhere. And not being able to find, I was specifically looking for Anne Rice and Stephen King, neither one was in science fiction. And I had to really search, and eventually I found them in literary fiction. Because they were not shelved in science fiction because they didn't want that stigma.
Boo.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is funny. Over the years, there have been a relatively limited number of genuinely popular amongst geekdom SFF authors who have had, let's say, crossover success in the sort of literary genre. Like, it's not at all unusual for eighth graders to read, you know, stories out of Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles, but they're never reading them through the lens of science fiction. They're just reading them through the lens of, this is a short story. Or like, this is a short story that's sort of like riffing off of, you know, Sherwood Anderson's Winesburg, Ohio as a literary echo. And so there's that. And then there's Neil Gaiman, you know, that his work has had considerable success being considered for capital L literary purposes, as well as, of course, genre purposes. But it's a pretty vanishingly small club of folks whose work ends up, you know, in the signing lines at cons and also with straight faces on people's syllabi.
Yeah,
there's you know, a lot of folks who get TV deals and then are sort of embraced by the masses these days.
Well, yeah, I mean, even on TV, they don't want to call it a science fiction show. They want to call it something else because there's still that stigma associated with science fiction. I will throw out one last little tangent thing. This last week of Thanksgiving in America also marked the date when the deal between Netflix and Marvel for Daredevil expired.
I heard about this.
And so Charlie Cox and a bunch of other people took to social media trying to get Daredevil with Charlie Cox back in the Marvel fold, either at Disney or at Hulu, maintaining the adult rating and the adult content.
Yeah, give us back the best Kingpin.
Yes. And so it'll be interesting to see, because Punisher will also eventually come up. Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and then that other one that we won't talk about.
Yeah.
Although I have heard, I think it was it The Legend of Shang-Chi, I believe is the title.
Yes.
Yes, I have yep. heard that was going out, and I'm curious about that project.
Yes. Obviously, though, all their projects have been put on hold. It looks like Black Widow is going to come to Disney Plus. Wonder Woman's going to HBO Max. I don't know if you heard that.
I did.
That was announced recently on Christmas Day. It'll be released in theaters and on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. So yeah, lots of that kind of stuff happening. Tracy, I don't know if you're paying attention, but I think we're running out of time. So if we're going to do picks, we may have to jump in and do them.
Yeah, let's make it happen.
Picks of the week.
And Tracy, why don't you go first this week and show Neil how it's done?
Sure. So last night, I had a gaming session with my family, and it was really good. It's a game that we've actually owned for a while and that my husband has played with friends many times, but hasn't broken out when it's been just him and myself and the kids. And partly it's because the side of the box says it's supposed to be like ages 14 and up, and I have a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old. Now, 14 and up is no reach for my 13-year-old, but we were kind of wondering about my daughter. But she's proven to be, during these quarantine times, really, really good at games, like shockingly good at them, like her ability to retain rules and various things. And so we tried this one out on her and on me and on all of us, and it worked out really well. It's called Above and Below. So the game itself is a worker placement and resource management game where you're imagining that you're creating a city, a little village that is, like the title suggests, both above ground and also below ground, that you have the opportunity to send adventuring parties down below to check out different pre-existing non-human civilizations that are below the ground and to mine for resources and get different sorts of things. And you want to ideally develop part of your village above the ground and also below the ground so you can diversify the sorts of things that you have access to. But what's also cool is every time you go to the area below, you do a die roll that corresponds to a number on a card that you've randomly drawn. And then it's a good old fashioned giant binder of scenarios where you flip to paragraph 38 or whatever and read what's there. And you get basically a mini choose your own adventure that you and your adventuring party that you've sent below have to navigate in order to figure out what rewards or pains you actually suffer for your efforts. And so it's got a great combination of different things. As a, you know, it's not brain burning, but there's enough going on in terms of different strategies to retain the attention of people who are really used to complicated board games. But at the same time, it's reachable for a clever tween. And it's also got a little bit of a pace changer in the sense of that sort of light core RP element in there. So if you're looking for something to play that works really well with three or more players, check out Above and Below.
Awesome. That sounds great. Neil, how about you? You got a pick this week?
I do, actually. I just had something very exciting happen a little while ago. For those who are not regular Pathfinder players, I just reached the end of the Rise of the Runelords campaign, a campaign I've tried to play through like three times before this, and it always fell apart. And it was obviously due to quarantine, like we were all in three different states and doing a Facebook video chat and running things on Roll20. And before all of this nonsense happened.
So hold on. So you were in three different states. So anger, denial, what was the third?
Frustration. But no, it's like our DM was in Michigan and one of our players is in Wisconsin and two of our players are here in Indiana and one of them was in Illinois, and it would have been a huge headache to get it all done in person. And before all of this nonsense going on outside, I never would have gamed online. I still don't love it as much as having people around a table, but for anyone else who has sort of been looking around and thinking, it's like, I really miss D&D or Pathfinder or Call of Cthulhu or whatever game you're used to playing, give online gaming a shot. It's not as bad as we all told ourselves it was going to be.
Yeah. So you've been using Roll20 and D&D Beyond, or no, you're using Pathfinder, so never mind.
You could use Roll20 for that.
You can.
Yeah,
Our group,
I did.
Yeah, we use Roll20 mostly just for map icons, etc. And then just because we were using Discord for a while, but my computer hates Discord, and just having just having voices didn't work as well. So we actually use the Facebook video chat and get everybody in one group. So then we can actually sort of see facial expressions and get the sort of back and forth that we're used to, you know, across a wood instead of, you know, going across 100 miles or so.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. It kind of sucks when you want to do that kind of gaming and someone doesn't want to turn their camera on.
Yeah.
Cause you do definitely miss something when you can't see the other person. Can't react to them reacting kind of thing.
Tried class of 25 kids and only 3 got the cameras on.
Nope.
Yeah, it's a bit of a thing.
So, Neil, before I go to my pick, you said Indiana?
Yes.
Seafood corn dogs?
Hmm?
You ever had a seafood corn dog?
I have not. What is that?
Apparently, it's a thing in Indianapolis.
Oh.
It's a shrimp mixture. They kind of make a shrimp sausage. Kind of thing with some stuff. Oh, Tracy's all over it now. Yeah, there's a way to do it. It's popular in Indianapolis.
There is a way to do it. It's just to not do it. What are
apparently it's a huge thing and it's really good and people love them.
There are lots of things that are huge things that shouldn't happen. We're trying to get done with 4 years of one of them.
It's Indiana. If it's not on a stick and deep fried, who wants to eat it?
Yeah, nobody here.
I mean,
that
rules apply to Iowa too, but they at least do sensible things like Twinkies. Shrimp, corn dog.
People left it
get
home
out of
with
my
oil
house,
and deep
Patrick
fryers.
Hester.
Hey, I will throw it out there on Beat Bobby Flay on the Food Network. Dude from Indianapolis beat Bobby
like
Flay
with the shrimp corn dog. Is it like
beat
a
him, yes.
stick?
Yep. No, he beat him. He beat him with a seafood corn dog.
Oh God, that just
because Bobby Flay reacted the way you did. He's like, what? What?
Right.
That's not a. Is that a thing? That can't be a thing.
No. God, no.
I've never wanted to dip a corn dog in teriyaki sauce before, but first time for everything.
Man.
So now that I've blown Tracy's mind completely, my pick this week is going to be a non-spoilery pick, hopefully, of The Mandalorian Chapter 13.
Ooh.
Which if you're going by seasons, it's Season 2, Episode 5.
All right.
And it's written and directed by Dave Filoni. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know who Dave is, he's the mind behind Clone Wars. And Rebels.
Yes.
And so this particular episode has lots of Easter eggs.
Pulling the verse together.
He's also the guy who he like remembers everything. And he does all these cool kind of callbacks for fans of Star Wars. And I'll throw out two things that appear in the episode. Loth cats are in the episode, which they have been in the episode in the past. And Morai are also in the episode.
Hmm.
So that gives you some clues as to other things that might be in the episode as well. But it was really, really well done. The episode before this, I didn't like as much, but the episode before that blew my mind.
Okay,
and was as Clone Wars as you could possibly get. I mean, it felt like Clone Wars comes to life.
Huh.
So that's my pick. Yeah, that's my pick. So if you're not watching The Mandalorian, I know we've kind of gotten away from talking about Star Wars on purpose. We switched over to food on purpose, but,
and pretty soon the needle's going to need to swing the other direction.
Food inside of Star Wars. Yeah. That's the next thing. So, yeah, Mandalorian chapter 13, go check it out. It was tons of fun, especially, if you know stuff about Star Wars and you've watched those different shows. Okay. So Neil,
yes,
we are running out of time. Why don't you tell people where they can find you online, where they can harass you on social media.
Where they can buy your stuff.
Huzzah. That. All right. My name is easy enough to find for those who can't spell it, because I don't know if it'll show up in text. NeilFLitherland.blogspot.com is the literary mercenary. Taking 10 blogspot.com is Improved Initiative, which is my gaming blog. You can find my author page on Facebook. You can find me on Amazon. You can find me on Patreon if you have like a good job and some extra money. I'm on Twitter, Tumblr. I am easy to find if you're willing to look for me.
And that's Neal Litherland, Litherland.
Yes.
And you said Blogspot?
Yes.
Yeah, did you migrate from LiveJournal?
No, I did not. I started there because I am a Luddite. I the fact that I have a USB mic is sort of a miracle.
It's just for the online games.
I don't actually play those. That's how non-tech I am.
You know, it took me like 3 years to convince SF Signal to move off of the platform they were on. I can't even remember what it was, to WordPress.
Mm.
And it was a chore, and eventually he liked it, but boy, yeah.
I have had some very small experience with WordPress. It is definitely not something I would do unless I absolutely had to.
Yeah, and I'm just teasing, but it trips me out when I hear Blogspot because I haven't heard that in a while.
That's fair.
All right. Alrighty. Well, it's been great having you on, Neal. I hope the holiday treated you well. And one way or the other, hopefully we'll be running into each other in 2021.
Huzzah! And it was a pleasure to be here.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Functional Nerds Podcast. If you're looking for other great podcasts to listen to, I recommend Beyond the Trope. They premiere new nerdy episodes every week. Giles and Michelle have piled up over 7 years worth of interviews with best-selling authors, award-winning actors, and other leaders in the creative community. And even though, I mean, they've sincerely disappointed me by not coordinating a meet and greet with every dog they know, their Patreon supporters and fans love them for keeping their weekly episodes short, sweet, and full of laughs. Check them out over at beyondthetrope.com. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a backer of the show over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have all new levels with some fantastic rewards like access to our patrons-only Facebook group, exclusive extra shows and content like the new video podcast, Just 10 Minutes, book giveaways, yep, we're giving away books, and even short story critiques provided by Tracy every month. If any of that sounds good to you, again, visit patreon.com/functionalnerds. This podcast is copyrighted by the Functional Nerds under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. To learn more about the Functional Nerds, visit functionalnerds.com.